This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Our guest today is Eric Anglada, who is a volunteer at the Catholic Worker House. He's chosen voluntary poverty. Now, Eric, why would anyone do that?
Well, in high school, I grew up in the suburbs of Philadelphia, and I coaxed my mother into taking me into Philadelphia. I rarely went into the city, but I wasn't interested in going to the center city part of it and the nice sections. I wanted to see the slums. Somehow I was strangely attracted to this. It was just wholly new to me. And I sensed a life there that I hadn't seen. Sure, there was destitution, but this is something that I wanted to live in this kind of an environment. So it was kind of an intuitive sort of thing. I grew up in a very affluent area, and it just... I found it to be deadening. And so, you know, what I've chosen you can call poverty, but it's you know, you have to make that distinction between, you know, the destitution, the homelessness of so many people that I've encountered at the Catholic Worker over the years. And so this is more like a simple living, voluntary simplicity sort of a thing.
Now, in Philadelphia, when you were growing up, you said in high school you were intrigued by this, fascinated by people in poverty. Did you grow up in one of the mainline suburbs there in Philly?
Exactly, yeah. I'm from Rosemont.
Okay.
So there's just an incredible amount of wealth there. And I just, you know, I just naturally just tended to stay away from that. I felt it was appalling, really. My parents were more middle class, upper middle class, but most of the people, you know, very old money, very... rich, and just it didn't feel right to me.
Mm-hmm. Now, were you involved in any religious education as a kid?
No, I grew up non-religious, not atheistic, but we just it wasn't an issue that we really dealt with much. But in high school, kind of out of the blue, and it's, you know, conversions are kind of one of those things that are, you know, tough to articulate. But I did join a church, Presbyterian church, in high school because I had that desire that for the ultimate. I can't really explain where that came from. I was just struggling with these issues, these ultimate issues. And naturally, as one, you know, coming from America, you're drawn into Christianity because that's sort of the dominant religion. So I went through with that, and so here I am.
Now, currently, you attend an Anglican parish.
Yes.
An Episcopal
Emmanuel
church.
Emmanuel Episcopal, yeah.
Uh-huh. But you have volunteered at the Catholic Worker House.
Yes.
So the people there are willing to accept Protestants, Anglicans.
There's atheists in the movement. There's Buddhists in the movement. There's non-Catholics, you know, Protestants. So it's pretty open. I mean, we have a mass once a month. I feel very close to... the Catholic Church, and I would consider myself a Catholic to some extent. But there's some things, part of Catholicism, that I struggle with. So I haven't made that full leap yet, but I feel very much a part of that. It's the Catholic Worker is unique. There's, as far as I know, there's not many movements within other Protestant denominations, as far as I know. And I have a deep respect for the Catholic faith. A lot of my heroes, the people that I kind of follow, you know, Dorothy Day and St. Francis, Thomas Merton, those folks are the people that I really feel close to.
I want to talk about some of those people in the Catholic Worker movement in general, but let me invite listeners to give us a call. This is a live program every Sunday afternoon here on WILL. And listeners are encouraged to call with comments or questions. Anywhere the program is heard, you may call us absolutely free, 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. Locally, several lines are available at 333-9455. So in Champaign-Urbana, 1-800-333-WILL. And we have a caller already. Let's go to line one. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Eric Anglada. Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes, Brother Eric.
Ah, Jim.
The various
I had a feeling you would call.
Oh, this was not a setup call, as well you know. The various Lutheran schools are opponents of the good deeds mandate of your interpretation of the Gospels. But, of course, Luther arose as the religious excuse of the newly developing Third Estate, the bourgeoisie, the burghers, the guilds, who were developing at its infancy the Industrial Revolution, and needs to free the serfs from the feudalism that prevented them from becoming wage slaves to new capitalism. Luther opposed the uprisings and remained the masthead of middle-class values, which I would sort of sum up as serve yourself and screw your buddy. But what happens in terms of class consciousness between you and those who were not voluntary poor? Can you be a Catholic worker and not punch a time clock? And if that's not enough on the table, I'd love to hear your criticism of the Champaign homeless shelter. Thank you very much.
Jim, what was exactly your question about Luther and all that?
Opposing the worker revolution and so forth.
I don't oppose the working revolution, the working class revolution.
No. Luther was.
Oh, I'm not defending Luther.
Well, I'm not either. You know, all I'm saying is where Luther came from. You know, religion basically.
Right.
Is an expression of what happens at the bottom of a society. It changes as a result of class divisions and class struggle, the changes in industry, the changes in the means of production. And Luther was the expression of the new emerging middle class, the Third Estate in Europe, and had to go up against the Catholic Church. But he also opposed the idea of good deeds,
right.
Eric.
Right.
And this was the main, and this is why I say he was the masthead of middle class values. Serve yourself and screw your buddy. Good deeds don't count.
Right.
There's no redemption. And then I also asked you, well, you know, if you're not one of the workers, then it's hard. I mean, I am a fan of Dorothy Day. Big time, but
right. Well, okay. What about the people who have, you know, who cannot get a job and perpetually, you know, unemployed, who can't make that leap? Those folks that may not fit into this class consciousness revolution. I think Jesus himself was a revolutionary, but I don't think he was that kind of a revolutionary. I don't think he was leading. A class consciousness movement, certainly not violent.
Take on the Champaign homeless shelter here, and I think you've done well so far. I'll let you go, and I'll hang up.
Thanks, Jim. Just briefly about the Time Center. There's been some issues with that, and I think it comes down to the philosophy that undergirds the ideas that are going into how the Times Center, the Times shelter is run versus the Catholic Worker.
What are some of the differences there?
Well, Peter Morin coined the term. Emmanuel Monnier coined the term personalism, taking personal responsibility. The Times Center, they pay salaries, so people are motivated by money. At least partly in getting that job. The federal government is giving them funds, and you know they have to make certain guidelines where they've got to, you know, people have to find a job and they've got to be fixed within a certain amount of time, and that's just simply not going to happen with most of the folks that are on the streets. They can't get it together. Enough. I mean, some can. I mean, I'm sure there's plenty of success stories that come out of the Time Center. But there's not a whole lot of solidarity. I mean, at the Catholic Worker House, I live with the folks that we serve, and it's all volunteers. We're not paid, so we're doing it because we're passionate about doing it. So that's that.
We have another caller waiting on line two. You're on Keeping the Faith with our guest, Eric Anglada. Go ahead, please.
Hello, this is Paul. How about that? Back to back.
Back to back.
Well,
what do you think about class consciousness, Paul?
I know. Philip Berrigan. Philip Berrigan, yes. Was fond of saying your hope is where your ass is.
Right.
And, you know, when you're living in voluntary poverty, it changes your perspective.
Exactly.
On the world and on justice, and I was wondering if you could just comment about that.
Well, just as background, Paul is one of the other workers at the Catholic Worker, so thanks, Paul.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, your context is everything. Where you sit, and it determines how you see the world. And I think, you know, my hope is with the poor. That's my hope because that's, I mean, if we're looking at the Gospels, if we're taking seriously the Gospels, look at the folks that Jesus hung out with, the marginalized, the outsiders, the nobodies. And, once you begin to make that movement towards poverty, towards simple living, you begin to see things in a whole new way. I mean, something like the Iraq War isn't just, it's not simply about killing people in Iraq. It's actually taking away money from people that were serving. When someone is poor and when they're not making enough money for a wage, or they can't make it in, an apartment or whatever, you think about, well, where are the government's priorities? What's happening there? Why are there homeless people? Why are there people that are coming to my doorstep and saying, I have no place to stay, I have no food to eat? And so, that perspective changes things. And so I hope that answers it somewhat.
Let me follow up with that, if I could, Eric. Why do these people keep showing up at the doorstep of St. Jude's House as well as the Time Center? Why are there homeless people in Champaign-Urbana here in the central part of Illinois?
Well, I mean, it's obviously an enormously complex issue. There's a lot of personal kind of issues that people are struggling with. But, a big thing is the wages. You know, you work 40 hours a week at minimum wage. You simply cannot, have three meals a day, have an apartment to live in. I mean, just, the economists have done that, and you just can't do it. So that's a big part of it. Obviously, people are making some bad decisions as well. Let's be honest about that. But I think this society breeds a kind of alienation that, people have come who are just so alienated, so on the margins from society, and I feel that way too, but it's a different kind of an alienation. But we can share that kind of outsiderness, I think.
Now, why do you feel as an outsider growing up in a nice suburb of Philadelphia, getting a good education? Did you go to college?
Yeah, I bounced around, actually. I started out, actually, I took a year off after high school to kind of explore the country a little bit and do some volunteering. And that's actually when I was introduced to the Catholic Worker Movement. I was in Phoenix and told me to, I was looking for a couple weeks, kind of a volunteer internship thing. And they said, check out the Catholic Worker. I had no idea what it was. So I called a house in Baton Rouge. And
so you would have been like 19 years old?
I was 19 years old, yeah. And when I came to that Catholic Worker, my mind was really blown. I knew that, this was it. There were two men who were Franciscans who had actually fallen in love with each other, dropped out of the Franciscan order, and started this Catholic Worker house. So that blew my mind as well. So it was just a whole all-around whole new experience. And so, these guys were living with 10 folks that had come off the streets, and they were serving a meal nightly, where 30 people were coming to eat every night. And they were picketing in front of the city hall about the death penalty and their active and labor issues, and so I knew that was kind of it. So I went to After that, I went to a Catholic university in D.C. for a year and pretty much hated it. and then went out east, or west, rather, to Seattle, and then went to a community college there for a year, and then went to Evergreen State College for a year. And then I was...
Tell us about Evergreen.
Well, Evergreen couldn't be more opposite than Catholic University, for one. I mean, it's the most unique school, I think, in the country. It's public, and it's, I mean, there's no grades, and there's one class per quarter at all the professors on a first-name basis, and it's just a different feel. And I kept on reading these, you know, political and spiritual, you know, books, and everything, you know, just points to the Catholic workers. So it didn't make sense for me to stay there anymore. And also, I mean, a degree offers people a certain amount of security. And I felt like the Gospels kind of were challenging me to go beyond that.
So you've chosen to be insecure.
Exactly.
And part of that was deciding not to get a college degree.
Yes, yes.
So what does it mean to choose poverty? Like I noticed you drove up to the station today in a bicycle, and when I opened the door for you, you were locking up your bike. Do you have a car?
No, I do not.
Is that a choice?
Basically, yeah. I mean, I couldn't afford to have a car. I mean, cars are expensive things. So, and it's bikes and buses, you know, in this city, and my feet are good enough. So
how poor are you? How do you get food to eat?
Well, I mean, that's the thing about this term poor, and there's a lot of connotations with that. I mean, I have a place to lay my head every night at the Catholic Worker House, and we have food there that's been donated through various, you know, the food bank and the like. So, I mean, I'm secure in that way. There's no getting around that. There is a big degree of security in my life. But we get a small stipend a month.
How much?
$200. So I make about $2,000 a year. But, I mean, that's excluding, I mean, room and board. So that's...
Mm-hmm.
And making less than $7,000 is a big thing to me for, you know, that's the poverty level, the federal poverty level.
For one person, for a single person.
Right. And if I made over that, then they would start to collect income taxes on me. Mm-hmm. And so in that, that voluntary poverty, it's also, a war tax refusal. I refuse to pay for this madness that's going on in Iraq.
Now, do you feel guilty at all taking up one of the beds in the Catholic Worker House when, you know, you're obviously smart enough and well-adjusted enough and you could get a job?
I do have a job.
Tell us what you do.
Well, I'm at the Catholic Worker House, and so we have about 10 women and children living at the house, and we offer a free meal every day. We feed about 70 people a day. So, you know, doing that, and I'm also, you know, involved in various peace activities, and every year we go down to the School of the Americas, which is a training camp for Latin American soldiers that...
It has a new name now.
Yes, it's Western...
I can never remember the name.
Institute for Security Cooperations, and they basically just changed the name because everyone was calling it, instead of the School of the Americas, the School of the Assassins. And so, you know, there's a big hypocrisy there. We're supposedly seeking out terrorists in the Middle East while we're training them in Columbus, Georgia. So
we have another caller waiting on our toll-free line, line 4. Before we go to that, let me repeat the numbers for others who'd like to ask a question or make a comment. 333-9455. If you punch that in, you can get several local lines here in Champaign-Urbana. The toll-free line is 1-800-222-9455. Line 4, you're on the air.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
Hey, I was wondering, what can someone that lives in Champaign-Urbana area do to help Time Center or the Catholic Worker House?
Well, you know, Peter Morin, who's one of the co-founders of the Catholic Worker, he said, there's not a problem with homelessness. There's a problem with people not opening their doors up to people in need. So, I mean, that would be a radical a radical sort of direct action move. But, I mean, it's you can come over and hang out at the Catholic Worker House.
Where is it?
It's 317 South Randolph, downtown Champaign. You know, there's – so, I mean, I would – first, I would get to know the poor, be around them, and then you can kind of go from there. I mean, there's lots of things you can volunteer and various things like that. But come over and hang out with the Catholic Worker and see what we do and see what maybe we miss. And
okay, thanks. I think I will.
Okay, great.
And, Eric, we'd like to give the phone number of St. Jude's House, which is the same as the Catholic Worker House.
Right, right. It's 355-9774.
355-9774.
Yes.
And that's in the 217 area code for our long-distance listeners. You were telling us some of the things that go on there. You provide a place for women and children to stay. Is there a time limit? How long can they stay?
Yeah, that's a big distinction between us and the Time Center. The Time Center, I think you have 30 days to find a job or meet some sort of goals that people have set up, but we don't operate on that basis at all. We tell people that if it works out, you're free to stay however long you need. We've got a woman at the house who's been there 4 years, I think. And so it's less a shelter. I mean, I really don't like the term, but it's, you know, people know that term. We try to build more of a community. So, I mean, we really don't set time limits unless it's not working out. And then
now the people who live there, do they get three meals a day or do they only get the noon meal that's free?
No, three meals a day. Basically, you know, we're closed during the afternoons, and they eat. They're welcome to eat with the kind of open lunch meal. But we have a sort of a community meal most nights around 5:30, and then breakfast, you know, they're on their own. They can just pick up whatever.
Now, many people who are homeless and probably who knock on your door at the Catholic Worker House are people who a generation ago would have been classified as seriously enough mentally ill that they would have been in an institution.
Right.
We know in this state and most other states within the last 10 years, many of the mental hospitals were closed because of lack of funds. The state legislature at the time said that they'd set up local service centers for the mentally ill, and people who weren't violent were sent back to their communities.
Mm-hmm.
But those local centers were never funded, never set up, at least not very many of them were. And so many of the people who are homeless are mentally ill. How do you react to that?
Before I came to the Catholic Worker, I worked in a group home for mentally ill women. There was about 40 women there. I don't know. I mean, you treat them like children of God and you as you can. I mean, some are, you know, can be pretty violent. Others are, you know, great people. It's, you know, something that you just kind of develop as you run into contact with these folks. So,
but some of those folks will never be able to be gainfully employed.
Right. I mean, there's simply people who are not going to be able to make it in the so-called real world.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm afraid about, this whole idea of class revolution that our previous caller was talking about, class consciousness. I mean, there are people that aren't going to make it to that working level. And I think there needs to be houses like ours that offer a place for people that just simply aren't going to make it. We don't force people to get jobs or anything like that. So
we're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Eric Anglada, who has chosen voluntary poverty and is working as a volunteer at the Catholic Worker House in Champaign, Illinois, 317 South Randolph in Champaign. If you have questions, we'd be delighted to have Eric respond. In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. Elsewhere, 1-800-222-9455. And people who are listening on the Internet may also, within the continental U.S., use that 800 number to give us a call. This program, along with all other WILL programs is available at 3dub.will.uiuc.edu, and then click on AM 580. We have several callers waiting. Let's go to line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith with Eric Anglada. Go ahead. Yes, line one.
Oh, hi. I thought I was waiting. Sorry. Hi, very nice topic. Just a couple comments there. There is the invisible face of homelessness in Champaign-Urbana, as I think is true of most medium-sized communities. What most people don't know is the hidden nature of homelessness. I happen to work at the local domestic violence shelter, and what most people don't realize is that you're homeless also if you're sleeping on a sofa or someone's floor, or you're sleeping in a bed that you're sharing with three other people on a rotating basis. And there's this huge number of very poverty-stricken people who live on that basis, but they don't really have their own place to live. And they're very vulnerable to exploitation. They're vulnerable to exploitation by alcoholics and drug addicts or abusive family members. And it's very hard for them to live, and they're hidden as far as homelessness goes. And I want to applaud Catholic Worker House for having the noon soup kitchen, or lunch, or whatever you want to call it, is truly one of the most magnificent services for people in Champaign-Urbana, because there's no questions asked. And I think that's really marvelous. So I guess I'm here with more of a comment. And just in case people don't know, there are homeless shelters in Champaign-Urbana. There's a huge gospel-based ministry on the west edge of town. But there's a tremendous need as well. The Time Center houses 60 to 70 single male individuals, and there is no comparable service for women and children in our town. So I just want to applaud our guest for his efforts to remove the stigma of homelessness. You're very brave to live in the facility that you serve, and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Thank you for that comment, and we do want to mention the Center for Women in Transition, which does help women and children as well.
Where he was coming from, and then Center for Women in Transition and us. But there's literally just about every day, sometimes, you know, 4 to 5 calls a day, we're getting calls from people who need a place. And we don't have space. Center for Women in Transition is always full. We're full.
I know.
And he's exactly right. People are sleeping at friends' houses or
often in very difficult.
Right. Relatives. I mean, there's people that are sleeping up by the train tracks. There's people sleeping in parks. there's a very hidden quality to it. And a lot of people are shocked when 70 people are coming to our door a day.
We have another caller waiting on line 4. Go ahead. You're on Keeping the Faith. Yes, line 4. Oops, we may have waited a little too long for that. Let's go to line number 2. You're on the air.
Hi.
Line 2.
Yes. I applaud the efforts of this program. I also have two questions. One is, I know Empty Tomb is giving all this in the name of Jesus, and I think that's an admirable effort. I also know that hospice does such things. But my question is, success in our culture is the name of the game. I consider this success, but can you have a guest speak to that issue? Because money speaks loud and clear. And I just think we need to hear more at the other side. And I'll hang up and listen. Please, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, success. I mean, I grew up always hearing my friends talking about their successful friends. And, of course, they meant that they're making lots and lots of money. And I just intuitively kind of reacted against that. And, you know, it's these folks are coming at it from a Christian kind of vantage point, and they're talking about poverty, simplicity. This is the real success. Dorothy Day, Leo Tolstoy, Francis, Simone Weil, Thomas Merton, even Gandhi. I mean, they're talking about living deeply. And so I consider myself successful, I guess. I mean, I'm living what my passion is, and I love it. And so to me, that's a success. Unfortunately, a lot of people make a lot of money, but they're not very happy doing it. So I wouldn't call that a success. So,
We're about halfway through our Keeping the Faith program this afternoon. Our guest is Eric Anglada, who is a volunteer at the Catholic Worker House in Champaign-Urbana. I'm going to give him a chance to clear his throat and have a sip of water while I attend a few other things. Let me let listeners know that next week our guest will be Jeff Trask, and he'll be talking about the Champaign County Christian Health Center that's fairly new in this community. Jeff Trask is one of the pastors at New Covenant Christian Fellowship. He's the associate pastor of Mercy and Justice. That'll be next week on Keeping the Faith, June 20, here on AM 580 WILL. Support for these programs is provided in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. My name is Steve Shoemaker. The Y is the oldest religious institution at the university. It was started by students in 1873, and since that time has been developing student leaders by providing opportunities for social action and community service. One of the Y programs this summer is called Communiversity. These are inexpensive, non-credit courses that people in the community teach. Some are students, some are community folks, some are faculty at the university or at Parkland who are teaching outside of their subject as well. Classes in dance, classes in exercise, body work, learn how to give a massage to a friend, Tai Bo, yoga, karate for kids, Aikido, photography. Clark Brooks has been a longtime teacher at the Y, teaching classes in basic 35 millimeter photography, intermediate photography. Summer wildflower expeditions. Course fee for only $10, and get to go on some trips with some people who know a lot about wildflowers. So all these kind of courses are available. You can check them out online at universityymca.org and then click on Communiversity, or you can pick up a catalog at the University Y, 1001 South Wright in Champaign. Our next collection at the Y for Dump and Run, our great collection of things that sometimes get tossed in the trash but that entering students next fall will love, we'll be collecting again on Saturday, July 10. So about a little bit less than a month from now, Saturday, July 10, 9 to 4, we'll be collecting more things. And our grand sale will be at the Stock Pavilion at the U of I, August 26, 27, and 28. Last week I read a poem about this time in the program, and I'd like to read another by the same author, Jean Murray Walker. This is a selection from her recent book, A Deed to the Light, published by the University of Illinois Press as part of the Illinois Poetry Series, edited by Lawrence Lieberman. I read this poem with permission of the Illinois Press as well as the author, Jean Murray Walker. For those of you who have not run across her before, she's a professor of English at the University of Delaware. She's the author of five books of poetry now and has received a number of awards and has been published a number of interesting places, Atlantic Monthly, American Scholar, Christian Century, Poetry. She had a poem just in the May issue of Poetry Magazine from Chicago. This poem was first published in the Christian Century. It's titled Van Gogh. All right, I love him for the way he painted vermilion, orange, jagged as shouts. And when no one bought them, no one even heard him, he shouted louder. Sunflowers, self-portrait. And years later, not one sold, he cut off his own ear. Then he had to bring it back on canvas hundreds of times, in the brass swelling of the bell that called him to dinner, in the complicated iris at the end of the asylum path. Think how, stooping at a fork in the road, he might have seen a stone-shaped ear. how the human heart, once it knows what it needs, will find it everywhere. How in the curve of his delicately padded cell one starry night, he must have murmured everything he had ever wanted to say straight into the ear of God. Van Gogh, a poem by Jean Murray Walker from her book A Deed to the Light, published just this year by the University of Illinois Press. We have listeners waiting to talk to our guest today, Eric Anglada. Let's go to line one. You're on the air. Go ahead, please. Yes, line one.
Yes. I'd like to ask your guest how he first came in contact with Dorothy Day and the Catholic worker tradition and kind of what's the genesis and of his interest in that tradition. I'll just hang up and listen.
Thank you very much.
Thanks. Like I was saying before, I took a year off between high school and college, and I was looking for various places to kind of volunteer. I had a social service kind of model that I wanted to help people. And so when I was in Phoenix, actually staying in this homeless shelter, kind of helping out there, someone said, check out the Catholic Worker. And I said, okay, what's that? And then I looked it up on the internet and then just called to the Baton Rouge Catholic Worker, and they kindly let me stay there for a few weeks. And so that was kind of my first introduction to it. And then I guess during my first year in college, I read Dorothy Day's Long Loneliness. And from there, I got more into the Catholic Worker books. And, you know, I was, you know, very much on an intellectual and spiritual quest, still am, reading, you know, Thomas Merton and Henry Nouwen and Tolstoy and those folks. And for me, it simply made sense. And just to give a little bit more of a background on the Catholic Worker, Dorothy Day and Peter Morin, kind of the co-founders.
When did they start the Catholic Worker movement?
May Day, 1933, was when the first issue of the Catholic Worker newspaper. It began as a paper, and they were talking about, you know, issues that were affecting the poor, international issues. And then people began showing up at their door, and so they were like, well, we've actually got to, you know, take seriously what we've been writing about. So it kind of evolved from there, and they just had a few folks living in their apartment and feeding some, serving soup, and then it just kind of grew from there, and people sent in money, and I guess the rest is history. And there's like close to 200 communities across the United States, and there's a few in Europe. It's predominantly kind of a first world movement, because basically we live off the excesses of capitalism. So that's that.
We have another caller on line two. Go ahead, please. Line two.
Yes. Previous liver at the time shelter, and just wondering what your views were on what the police do to actually homeless people here in this town, and how they deal with them, being that they're not quote-unquote a member of society anymore. I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
I don't have a whole lot of experience with the police. Mostly my experience with the police has been them dropping off people at our door. You know, sometimes in the middle of the night, they get, you know, homeless folks will go to the police station and say, you know, I've got nowhere to stay, or if they're breaking up a domestic dispute or something like that, and they've got to get the woman out of there. You know, I couldn't really make a judgment on that. I just don't have enough of an experience.
I know when the men's emergency shelter was at McKinley Church, mm-hmm. often the police would bring people that they would find, particularly in the winter, mm-hmm. in dangerous situations where they didn't have a place to go, to the shelter. And, of course, sometimes when there was violence or potential violence, the police would need to be called to the shelter to break it up or to take a weapon away from someone if someone had sneaked one in. I guess one issue we haven't raised about homeless folks is you talked about sometimes people make bad decisions, but What about diseases like alcoholism? That's certainly a big part of one reason why people end up no family support, no work, no place to live.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunately rampant. And a lot of people, I mean, they stay alcoholics, you know, in order to cope with the situation. You don't have a place to stay. So, you know, have some alcohol, you know, will soothe your pain to some degree. But, you know, it's, I try my best not to call the police when people get violent. You know, the traditional Catholic worker rule, and there's very, very few rules, is that there's no cops. It's pretty hard to live up to that. People, you know, it's a struggle because people are, they're disadvantaged. They're, you know, they're marginalized from the system. And so it's, they're really, in this situation, at least partly because of the establishment's kind of rules, and they just somehow don't fit into that. So,
I guess part of the problem is with alcoholics, people can't sort of get their own lives together enough to deal with the disease, and and I know when we had the men's emergency shelter at McKinley Church, some people felt that we were just kind of enabling people to keep being alcoholics.
Yeah, and that is a tough issue. And it, you know, I really don't know what to do in those situations. We try and love them as best we can, and we deal with them, try and deal with them as people. Which is unfortunately a kind of a countercultural approach. We don't treat them as clients or numbers. So we try and work with them. But people have got some, you know, deep seated issues that are tough to deal with.
All right. We have another caller waiting on line one. Let me give the phone numbers for others who might like to make a comment or ask a question. 1-800-222-9455. Is a toll-free line. In Champaign-Urbana, please use a local line, 333-9455. And let's go to line one. Yes, you're on the air.
Thank you. I called before. I had three boys, and my question pertains to pets. I was with somebody this afternoon whose pets are her kids. Can you speak to that issue, Eric? And I know there are many people whose pets are like their kids. So how does the Catholic Worker House deal with that? And I'll hang up.
In terms of
pets? If people come in who are homeless and have pets, for example, do you allow them to bring a pet into the house?
I honestly have never dealt with that.
You haven't had that problem.
I haven't had that issue. Sorry.
Yeah, well, sometimes that does happen, and it's difficult because some people at the house may be allergic to a cat or a dog, and that's the closest person.
And public health would have some issues with that,
absolutely.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Now, the Catholic Worker House gets no government funds, or it accepts no government funds.
Right.
It asks for none. How do you survive?
Just private donors. We are just incredibly blessed in this local community. Lots of Catholic workers all over the country, I mean, they struggle month to month, and we do comparatively well. We've got good relationships with some of the churches, the synagogue in town. We've got a significant base of people who just send $10 a month in, and that's kind of what gets us by every month and pays all the bills. And then, you know, people are just extremely generous.
How many people volunteer at the Catholic Worker House?
A week, we probably have close to 50 people that come in a week. We've got four live-in workers, and then we have a different, you know, ranging from four to seven or eight people that come in every day. You know, they come in every Thursday or whatever. And so it's probably around 50 folks that come
in. How are those volunteers organized? How do you know who's coming when and...
That's the magical thing about anarchy. Somehow we are organized. I don't know how it's done, but people are responsible, and we've got kind of a crew leader for each day that, you know, they're there, but, you know, no one's forcing them to be there. So, you know, but people are faithful to the house, and so you know, a lot of it's been this particular community has been here 25 years, and some of those folks are, you know, have been there from the beginning. And so a lot of faithful workers. It's pretty.
Who are some of the saints?
Ellen McDowell was a huge influence there. Sharon Dorsey was one of the folks who initially got it off the ground. Lee Esterbrook, Paul Gallagher is one of our former callers. He's been there for 7 or 8 years, mm-hmm. living there. That's impressive.
Now, how long have you been there?
Close to 2 years, about a year and a half or so.
Now, you're a fairly young man. Of course, everybody looks young to me, but...
I look especially young, well, too.
How old are you, if I
may? I'm 24.
24.
24.
Now, you've chosen this life of voluntary poverty.
Mm-hmm.
You're single. Mm-hmm. You have only yourself to look after.
Right.
Do you ever intend to have a family?
I mean, I'm open. Mm-hmm. I'm open to the spirit, if mm-hmm. you will. I mean... It's Paul and Trina are a family living at the house, so it is doable. That's been Dorothy Day always said, you know, if you're going to get married, you're going to move away from the Catholic Worker. But since her death in 1980, there's just been an enormous growth of Catholic Workers started by families.
Really?
Yeah. I mean,
even with kids?
With kids, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of diversity within the movement. There's farms.
How could you raise a kid on $400? A month from both mother and father.
I don't know how people do it. You know, some people have part-time jobs. You know, the federal assistance. Some folks are on welfare.
Mm-hmm.
It can be done. I'm convinced that it can be done.
Mm.
But I, you know, admittedly, it's about as easy as you can get with my personal situation. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't have any health insurance, but I'm also young and healthy. And single, and so there's a lot of concerns that I don't face from day to day. So I happen to be very lucky on that.
Do you have support of your family to do this?
Yes.
But they're not paying for your health insurance.
No, they're not.
That would be more than your stipend.
Right, yeah. Right. My family is supportive. They're great. I think my sisters especially probably think I'm a little bit bizarre, but my, you know, loving family, and so, you know, if I needed help, they would be there.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned that you attend the Emmanuel Episcopal Church mm-hmm. in town, which is, let's see, it's not quite Protestant, not quite Catholic. What the?
It's the finest religion money can buy.
I guess how ecumenical is the Catholic Worker House? I mean, it grew out of this movement within Catholicism,
right?
But
right.
it's certainly open to people.
It's open to anyone, yeah.
Yeah.
I think there's a house in Seattle. I think they're all Buddhists. I'm not sure how they make that connection, but you know, it comes down to the practice, the everyday okay. practice, and atheists, Christians, Buddhists, Jews. I mean, we can all come together, you know, work towards the common good mm-hmm. of all. But it is at its root, at its foundation. It comes out of the Catholic social teachings in particular.
We've told people who are curious about volunteering that they could call the St. Jude's House, the Catholic Worker House in Champaign, at 355-9774. That's an area code 217. If people wanted to make a financial contribution, a donation, is it a 501c3 charity?
It actually is, contrary to Catholic Worker philosophy. We're one of the few Catholic Workers out there that is a nonprofit, and so we are tax exempt.
So people who make a donation can take
they
it
can, but from typically not. Typically,
most
people
Catholic
don't.
Workers' houses don't.
Yeah, I mean, the tradition is of anarchism
and
no relationship whatsoever to the government. They're doing this out of their own free will, personal responsibility. But you know, it does make it easier being
sure.
a nonprofit. So,
and if people want to make a donation, they would make the check
to St. Jude Catholic Worker. They can send it to let's see. P.O. Box 1612, Champaign, Illinois, 61824.
P.O. Box 1612, Champaign, Illinois, 61824.
Yes.
A check to St. Jude's House.
St. Jude Catholic Worker.
St. Jude Catholic Worker.
Yeah.
And who was St. Jude?
St. Jude, that's actually an interesting story. St. Jude is the patron saint of hopeless causes. There's actually in the New Testament a very, very small letter, the letter of Jude. And so I think he became the patron saint of lost causes, hopeless causes, because the name was close to Judas. And so people were afraid to pray to, you know, Jude and maybe get Judas instead. So, you know, you only came to Jude, you know, if it was really bad. That's the story I've heard. I mean, I don't really get into the, I think some of the saint stuff can get a little bit hokey sometimes, but.
We're talking with Eric Anglada, who is a volunteer at the Catholic Worker House in Champaign, Illinois, about his experiences and his choosing voluntary poverty. Eric, you also have mentioned that you are opposed to the war in Iraq. Are you opposed to war in general?
Yes, I'm a pacifist.
Let's talk a little bit about that.
Okay.
How did you reach that decision?
I guess reading pacifist writers. It's right there in the Gospels. To me, I don't understand how anyone can call themselves a Christian and not be a pacifist. When Jesus said, love your enemies, I'm pretty sure he was serious about that. You know, Augustine is someone who can say...
Did Jesus say, love your enemies before or after he picked up the whip and drove people out of the temple?
Oh, well, all of the non-pacifists always bring up the temple scene. Of course, the incident reports... There was no violence done to anyone, except to me. I think maybe the cows or whatever were driven out, but there's no reporting of him using the whip on anyone except turning tables over. And I guess I could qualify the pacifism by saying that, you know, property destruction. You think about the Berrigan brothers, 1968, the Catonsville. 9 action where they broke into the draft board in Maryland and destroyed files. To me, that's not a violent act. Violence is done to people. So I just, you know, the model is the cross. He was killed rather than killing anyone. So, and of course, for the first 300 years or so, there's really no record of any Christian who was in the army until Constantine converted and became the dominant religion of the day, and then the state got mixed up into it, and that's kind of a big downfall in my mind of Christianity. But that, you know, that's something that the early Christians took very seriously, and there has been, unfortunately, a small, you know, it should be a lot bigger contingent of pacifist Christians, you know, from Jesus to the early Christians, the Desert Fathers, to the Franciscans, to the Quakers, the Anabaptists, to the 20th century when you have, Martin Luther King, Dorothy Day, all these folks. Even, you know, Gandhi was like, you know, everyone else but the Christians sees that Christ was a pacifist. So...
We're down to our last couple minutes. Let me just ask a couple questions about the effects on your life of having made this choice already. How frequently do you get to go back to Philadelphia to see your folks or visit your sisters? Is that something that you really have to sacrifice?
Well, part of the deal if I'm going to visit my folks is they're going to pay for my bus ticket. Mm-hmm. So. I can do a little bit with my stipend, but not a whole lot of traveling. You know, the house does pay for some travels that, you know, going to various protest activities. So I get to do a lot of traveling that way. But, you know, I this doesn't prevent me from, you know, seeing my family.
Where do you get your clothes?
I get them from our donation box. So that can be, you know, a struggle sometimes. But gosh, I mean, you see how I'm dressed. This is all donated stuff, and
looks nice.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, again, I'm living off the excesses of capitalistic society, and you know, I have a hard time not looking preppy. You know, going into that box. You know,
how do you get your hair cut?
One of the other community members cuts it for me.
What do you do when you need new glasses?
I haven't faced that one yet, but that will be an issue at some point.
Oh. What other issues do I not know enough to even ask about?
I don't know. I mean, for me, it's really, it just makes sense to me. It's not extreme way to live. It may be extreme compared to mainstream society in some ways, but it feels natural to me. I feel very rich in this life, and there aren't a whole lot of struggles. I mean, I'm young and I'm healthy, and I've only been in it for a few years, and so I'm very blessed. And so, I mean, my brother-in-law always says, "Well, I want to see where you are in 10 years." You know,
how do you resist the advertisements?
Well, I turn the TV off.
Okay,
I mean, that's a big one. I think the TV is one of the most detrimental influences today. And when I came to the Catholic Worker, we decided to cancel our cable and television, and so that really is a huge one, because that exerts such a potent influence.
No ads on WILL.
Good.
Our guest today on Keeping the Faith has been Eric Anglada, and I want to thank him for being with us. This is his first time on radio or TV, and he told me he was nervous at the beginning, but you didn't sound nervous at all. So thank you, Eric.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And thanks to our many callers today who had comments or questions. Keeping the Faith is a weekly program on WILL AM 580 from 5 to 6 on Sunday evenings. And we do thank our many people who've over the years have agreed to be a guest on this program and respond to questions from callers about issues of spirituality and religion and ethics and values. Coming up next week on Keeping the Faith, our guest will be Jeff Trask, who will be talking about the Champaign County Christian Health Center. Jeff Trask is the Associate Pastor of Mercy and Justice at the New Covenant Christian Fellowship. Sarah Knuse will be our guest coming up in July, talking about her Public Square project. That'll be on July 4th. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these programs. I'm the Executive Director of the University YMCA at the University of Illinois. The Y is the oldest religious organization at the university, and happy to be a sponsor of Keeping the Faith. Thank you all for listening.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
By today's medical definition, Brad Pitt is overweight and Russell Crowe is obese. The standards are even tougher for women. But are those extra pounds really that bad? Maybe it's time we all lighten up about fat. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, why one expert says America's war on weight is fraught with hypocrisy. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. With only 17 days left until the end of our fiscal year, we're still $132,000 away from our listener support goal. To maintain all the programs you value, we must close this gap by June 30th. Please call 217-244-9455 right now with your credit card contribution. That number again, 217-244-9455. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with scattered showers and thunderstorms in the evening, then partly cloudy with a slight chance of showers and thunderstorms after midnight. The low in the upper 60s with southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The high in the upper 80s with southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour. It's 6 p.m. Central Time. This American Life is next.